Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it's our Thanksgiving metaphoric feast that we're brewing with wonderful compatriots here. But first, you know, let us give blessings to the lunar eclipse election resonating behind us, in which even the most conventional commentators said, you know, fear and anger are no longer working. They no longer have a pull on the psyche of the populace. We go, that's good. And the majority of Americans desire democracy. So we have averted the mega, mega autocratic nightmare calamity, and it's been shrunk down to a manageable catastrophe. So we're grateful for that. And also we love, you know, in Arizona, Lakota man says, thanks to the Hopi and Navajo people who put us into the realm of democracy. So here we are, welcoming the return of Sarah Wolcott and Christine Hill, that we are gathering to brew our metaphoric feast of gratitude, which of course requires digestive bitters, right, for America's Pluto return. So let's see. All right, there we go. We can do this. I will read. I will introduce. Well, welcome both of you, and then I will just remind people of your august and wonderful whatever it is resume. Well, actually, let me turn to both of you too, because I have, you know, Sarah Wolcott is a descendant of some of the founding fathers of the United States of America. She co-conspires with the divine mistress of time to conjure better origin stories. There we go. Ecological family histories and mythologies for our interconnected being. And Christine Marie Hill is a member of the Beaver Clan, Tuscarora Nation, Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Like the beavers for whom her clan is named, she is an eager agent of resourcefulness, persistence, and a willingness to topple trees for glorious architecture that benefits and fireproofs the hood. Our website is collectivewisdom.org. Welcome, team. Welcome, Chrissy and Sarah.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here again. Very excited about today's conversation.
That's great. So it's, you know, we brewed some backstage, and then there's the improv, and you will craft us into an actual ritual. But I love starting off with my friend Virginia Daly's dream, all-purpose dream, that she had years ago. In the dream, there's a cauldron and a malevolent figure is stirring the cauldron, and vapors of discord are filling the air. And a voice in the dream says to the dreamer, let's have that be all of us now. You must grab hold of the stirring stick, the story stirring stick, and stir the cauldron in the other direction. So the dreamer, us, slowly, as though through molasses, makes way to the cauldron. And the minute we put our hands on the stirring stick, the malevolent figure dissolves into the earthers, whatever. And then now all of us, we can really feel our hands on the story stirring stick, and we are beginning to, against centrifugal force, stir the cauldron in the other direction. There we go. So, oh, I love that. I love that. We're all stirring together. We're all stirring together, like Baba Yaga stirring her flying house. And then what is, you know, Thanksgiving, you know, it, well, we'll get to its astrological timing and its goodness as well as its badness. But this year, right now, Jupiter, the intelligence of gratitude and blessing, is stationing. It really wants our attention on the new moon of yesterday. So even more is this a powerful time of gratitude. So wherever you want to guide us to begin first, Christine Hill and Sarah Wolcott.
Well, I imagine that as our listeners are listening to this, that many of you are perhaps in the kitchen preparing for a Thanksgiving gathering by a table, or perhaps you are steadfastly not engaging in Thanksgiving this year. And wherever you may be, and wherever you may be in your preparations or your feasting or your fasting, we want to invite you to join us as we recreate and re-liturgize this holiday in a different way, to take that Jupiter power and to let it infuse this moment with a different kind of stories to really grasp that ladle. And you can't see it, but right here gathered before us, we were talking about what would it really take to make this this show, this conversation about Thanksgiving, not just like people talking about it, but to imbue it with the action of ritual and the power of a transformational moment right here, right now, not in the future, and not in the past, but right here, right now. And to work with time and space differently. And so Christy and I have before us here a cauldron in a ceremonial bowl, and is made of old growth sequoia, old growth that had been fallen and crafted by some friends of ours near the Yurok Nation in Northern California. And we have some sage, and we have a goblet of water, and we have the stick. And the story that Caroline shared at the beginning of stirring with the stick, I think is going to be the metaphor, that the dream of the stirring, and of how we cast out that demon creature who has been stirring us all into a space of violence, and let us now shape the direction of the story differently and turn that cauldron and that stick of that cauldron differently. Like, this is a moment when we can actually physically and practically and symbolically do that together.
And as we stir, we think about the direction that we were stirring. And in my mind, we were stirring clockwise to the left. And in our communities, we generally pass things to the right to bring us together in our right minds, in our good minds, to bring ourselves together as one. That's also part of the words before all else, known as the Thanksgiving address, that some of you might have known. In Tuscarora, it is Kanaharathetra, the words before all else, the Thanksgiving for all the people, the land itself, the things that grow on the land that are not human, more than human, part of the cosmos. And so as we stir to the right, as what we would call counterclockwise, I think it's fairly interesting that we engage with Jupiter, and it's at its station that we can call these stories back the way that they were meant to be heard, the way they are still meant to be lived and are lived for now and into the future. Also with your ancestors joining us, Caroline. After our last show,
right?
I did some poking about, and there's a good chance that our families did not necessarily know each other, but also a very high probability they knew of each other and of how they were moving in the world in this area.
Yeah, and may it be in the cauldron we resolve, right? That's right, because my ancestor was Thomas Dudley, the second governor of Massachusetts, who booted Roger Williams out to go, who went and founded Rhode Island, because Roger Williams wanted to cooperate with the Indians, right? So we're all what is it? We're cleansing ancestral dynamic to liberate it in this particular cauldron, and meeting with reciprocal blessings and humor, right? So yeah, Jupiter, the intelligence of curiosity and generosity, and the studies said that, you know, luck increases when we run on the fuel of curiosity and generosity, you know, and it's the intelligence of stories. So it's so wonderful to convene with you both. And as the Arabian Night says, you know, people need stories even more than they need bread. So the gathering around the stories into the cauldron, and the stories out of the cauldron. So yes, this new moon in Sagittarius, Jupiter's sign, and just to say, and then to toss it back to you both, you know, so for years I've been saying, you know, that Thanksgiving is not just a horrific Hallmark card of genocide. There's that, but it is astrologically timed, right? So underneath everything, there's a larger, wonderful rhythm to gather. You know, so we time Thanksgiving. It's the first Thursday. Here we are, Thor's Day, sacred to Jupiter, after the sun enters Sagittarius, Jupiter's sign. So that's how we time it in Jupiter again, curiosity, stories, thanksgiving, well-wishing. So both of you speak of, you know, longing for, you know, the authentic underneath all that, what we want to compost. You'd said the triumphalism and the pageantry, yeah, that will go into the cauldron, right? And then the yearning for gathering, as many of us and beautiful dedicated citizen listeners now too, we're all gathering with the force of reciprocal blessing. But yeah, so you're humming back to our intrinsic yearning for harvest festivals, right? For gratitude and reconciliation that you speak of.
And you know that thing you said, Carolyn, about recognizing that there was someone who wanted to befriend the native peoples and then subsequently was kicked out of settler society. And to really honor those ancestors who were curious and who did form partnerships and did fall in love and who did step outside of the convention of their time and the mindsets of their time to reach across the what was the kind of the mental divide caused by the doctrine of discovery. There were always those Europeans who wanted something different. And then to also call in and to recognize and to honor the legion of indigenous ancestry who have been speaking for togetherness and fellowship and for a multiplicity and a paradox and a multiplicity of ways of living and a multiplicity of stories and to live in harmony with these lands. And that there is all like, you know, we all have ancestors who have been reaching out for fellowship across difference. And that is something that we can lean upon, as well as to recognize those. It's also important to recognize those ancestors who have in our family lines, in our culture, in our society, in the shape of our institutions, who sought violence and who did not see a way. They only saw one way, and that was their way. And they could not find a way for collective harmony, and they could not let themselves dip into the wrap and the weave of kinship, but to let ourselves stir this cauldron towards kinship.
And just remind us, as part of our digestive bitters, the doctrine of discovery is what?
2 minutes? Can we give her 2 minutes on that? We could give her 2 hours and 2 days and 2 weeks. Give me a couple minutes on that.
You can
feel like when I tell the stories.
Yeah, I do. Very much like, especially these histories. I didn't ask for this.
You
well,
did
the,
not ask.
The essential thing about it that you want to toss into the alchemical cauldron.
I think the essential thing about the doctrine of discovery is a theological, by which, you know, spiritual, moral attempt to I say attempt because it both was successful, but not fully successful, to cast a spell of violence and domination.
Yeah.
And that violence and domination was they sought the blessing of a being they called God, who on some ways, you know, maybe that being did bless them, or give them what they asked for, which was dominance and the subservience of other people. And they saw that as their right of conquest, their right of victory, to uphold violence and the subjugation of other peoples, and to take from the peoples, to take from the earth, to take from the very spirit of life itself, and to narrow that and to compartmentalize that and to subjugate that into something that we call a property system.
Right. So dominance into the cauldron.
Dominance into the cauldron.
As an evolutionary dead end, you know, we must die to it lest we die from it, you know, and out is collaborative cahooting. And the wonderful word graxing, it's a biological term when organisms come together as a community to address more effectively a big danger. And we go, yes, global graxing. No, that's great. That's great. And I love William Blake called the Old Testament God, old nobodaddy, right? And so because we are, everybody here, is a heretic, which was a term of praise in early religion, because it meant cross-pollinating contributor to culture so that knowledge never became dogma. So we go, we heart heresy. There we go. So yes, and then the yearning. So we have different things to offer, to and fro, absolutely. It's a story festival. There's so much that's beautiful. Not only is Jupiter stationing, which wants our attention, and it's so beautiful at night. Everything is a prayer. Saturn rises first, quite faint. Saturn is the principle of dedication and dedication to wise community leadership. Then Jupiter rises, and Jupiter is blessing and opportunity. And then Mars rises so red, right, and says, all right, let's do that thing. So it's dedication, opportunity, woofiness is really every night. I mean, we got to see Jupiter. And right now in the Berkeley home ship, right, Jupiter is rising due east. It's stationing. It's in its own sign of Pisces. Its image is a prism, unifying stories, overcoming division. Those are very beautiful. And the medieval said, such a strong Jupiter. Truly, this is an opportunity for a for real Thanksgiving. They called it having a guardian angel. And I love that. What it meant is for all of us who look deeply into the horror, if we ever get too transfixed, it's like a wise ancestor being comes up behind us, snaps fingers and goes, how about a cup of tea? Right, there I go. And the other way that I love is each part of us, all of us, our inner democracy represented by the planets has a different default setting, but Jupiter's default setting is curiosity. Other parts of us can go, oh my God, the world's on fire, whatever. And Jupiter goes, okay, what are we going to do? How interesting. So we're here to gather our buoyancy and also our trickster selves. And let me offer by telepathic magic, I have such a lot of coyote hair from my great ancestral now friend Stella Coyote. So she's here, all the critters and animals, that each person, it's our toast, what we stir into the cauldron, what we take out, our against all odds trickster ingenious altruism. Right, there we go. By the, I blow the hair now to you, Chrissy and Sarah, and to everybody, all of our team around the table eating or post eating. There we go. May coyotes' resilience and laughing at adversity be with us henceforth. Right, and may we aspire, may we dedicate to being agents of liberating story, that we have spicy insight with a kind heart. Right, that's a great challenge.
Right, ladling some spicy into our goblet.
You can hear the little bits of the way that our stir, our spoon is clinking against the outside of our cauldron and pouring the water into the goblet.
Now, are you inviting our listeners to wherever they might be to have a cup for our finale toast?
I believe that is an invitation.
That is absolutely. to take a moment to gather perhaps a cup for a final toast and to let yourself pour a libation as we continue this conversation. And we are receiving that coyote fur and we are putting it into our cauldron here across the vastness of time and space. And we can receive those blessings. And it's one of the wonders of our times that we can receive each other's blessings. And those blessings absolutely can change our hearts and can strengthen ourselves as we go into these cold
times of winter.
Right, we were talking about feasting too, and you know, because I lived with a wolf dog and a coyote, a half coyote dog, so long, we would go, right, it is in our ancient DNA. This is a time to eat lots of fat. We're gonna, because they would go, la, la, then I go, we're gonna make it through winter. We're gonna make it through winter. We don't have the harshness we once did, but the hunger still, you know, is there. But yeah, you're...
if we don't like feed our animal selves, then you know, we risk that that hungry spirit will eat us, you know.
So we're gathering at the feast, you know, literal and metaphoric, what will get us through winter, you know, so.
And what will help us to change the stories of the past and to create a different origin story for ourselves that can give us both the power and the strength of truth, as well as the generosity of kindness. Chrissy, do you have something?
Yeah, I do. And actually, it's not always the stories that need changing, but it's the person, it's the storyteller. And to call back just what you were saying, Caroline, about curiosity, for me, as I'm walking through these lands and these times, this curiosity really leads to deep compassion. And compassion is the way for me to engage with others, to hear some of the stories that are still harmful. We talked in our pre-cauldroning of, you know, poisons, and how when we bring poisons out, we also need to bring blessings and antidotes for those poisons that we are naming and pulling into life. And for me, curiosity and compassion lead to the ability to sit and maybe hear a different story or experience the storyteller going through transformation of telling a different story for themselves, and that those different narratives, and holding that there are narratives that we hold that are harmful and narratives that we hold that can be healing. And sometimes they're both. And that as we stir the cauldron and look for the transformation, we can leave the cauldron sitting and simmering and brewing. So things that are not transformed in this moment might be transformed in the future.
And to recognize like that long, the time, to recognize that some, that fires can take a long time.
It's a crock pot for crackpots.
And we have added compassion and curiosity into the cult.
Oh, that's great. No, and curiosity and compassion. Yes, 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 yes. And I love all that you are wafting forth from your cauldron. And may our narratives about ourselves and others be liberating, right? We don't want to be in a cartoon, an imprisoning cartoon, which somebody thinks of us in a limited way. And in turn, we want to hold, not count on, but hold, you know, liberating possibilities for the other. And curiosity, compassion. It's like the Black gospel teachings of the South here says there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story. It's like, well, it's such a daunting assignment, right? But it's worthy as a mystery to put on the table, like, because we might all have people going, oh, that's right, yeah.
Need a
on that. You're increasing the cauldron strength for that. That's really good. And then we're inviting also, you know, ancestors who come into our mind, to our table, and wonderful ally Nalila Anderson, who was raised from birth as a kahuna in Hawaii, and her saying, you know, we had to learn poison and harm in our tradition, not to use them, but in the body of a person or the culture, the killing points are the same as the healing points. Mm. The difference is intention. So I always kept that, like, ooh. So So it's an opportunity to clarify our intention for those of us who have deep, sizzly, insightful access, that the intention be to heal. And by the power of our collective gathering, here we are, you know, may our dedications be supported, right? And then we spoke of gratitude and reconciliation and the Wampanoag Reservation on Martha's Vineyard. Did you want to bring that up?
Yeah, so as I'm expecting many of our listeners are aware, the Wampanoag people had been off on the coast of what's now Massachusetts. There's a little curve of land, and then off the which we now call Cape Cod, and off the coast of that is what we now call Martha's Vineyard. And the very edge of Martha's Vineyard are these beautiful white cliffs that look out to the sea. And the way the sun hits the cliffs in the morning has a shimmery, soft light, which turns everything into this sort of magical glow. And one can almost see the, off in the distance in the ocean, one can almost see Moshuk, one of the creator gods, and his conversations with the great whales of that ocean.
Whales.
And so, you know, giving thanks to the whales and the whale songs that have called to and been a part of the Wampanoag communities for eons and eons and eons, and the way that they care for and love that ocean and love that land, which when the Europeans came in like the 1500s to that place, they some said that if they could live anywhere in the world and call it paradise, that might be it, because there's just so much fertility and so much beauty and so much growth. And it would be 100 years later of really like kind of ups and downs in trade, and many Wampanoag people being stolen, and including the person who we later come to know as Squanto. He had a, which is not his original name, was the name that Europeans gave him as a shorthand. He was actually originally stolen into slavery, and went to Europe, and then was taken out of slavery, was rescued, and then kind of learned enough English to go back two or three times to the New England area, and eventually was able to get back to his home community in the Wampanoag land. And when he got there, many years after he had originally been stolen, he was so devastated because during the time that he was gone, a great plague had swept through his land. And most of his friends and family and villages had died. And even to this day, people don't really know what that particular plague was, but it left great emptiness and a great sorrow. And it changed the political relationships on the land. And it was into that context that the Mayflower comes. And so for a long time, the Wampanoag people just watched the strange group of black-shoed and black-clad men and a few women, but many had died in the voyage, and they were starving. And even in their, even though they were praising God, they were also stealing from their neighbors. They were stealing corn from the burial grounds of their other Wampanoag villages that had been bereft by plague. And of course, this was watched and seen. And eventually, through a combination of a little bit of generosity and a lot of need and sort of the need for survival, they decided one particular village reached out to the pilgrims, and they brokered a peace, and they shared and they taught, and they had a few months of collaboration and a few months of learning and learning each other's culture and each other's ways, and which led to the which led to a feast day. It's more tricky than that, but that's
tricky.
There's a lot more weird things that happened, but that's a short story.
We're going to take a quite long musical break, but hold that story.
Okay, we're going to pause on a feast day.
Right. This is Carolyn Casey. This is the Visionary Activist Show. This is my wonderful guest, Chrissy Hill and Sarah Wolcott. We are brewing a metaphoric Thanksgiving feast. And here's Steve Klaper, Hazam Steve Klaper song to Pope Paul's lyrics. Here we go, I think. Yes.
All-powerful God, filling all the universe and the smallest of your creatures, you embrace all life with tenderness, oh yeah. Pour out the power of your love that we may protect life and beauty. Fill us with peace that we may live as sisters and brothers. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us every day. Hey, hey. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us in every way. God of the poor, help us to rescue the lost and forgotten of this earth. So precious in your eyes, oh yeah. Bring healing to our lives and we'll protect the world from all this confusion. Touch the hearts of those who look only for gain at the expense of the earth. We thank you. Whoa. Thank you for being with us every day. Hey, hey. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us in every way. Teach us, O God, to discover the worth of each and everything, to be filled with awe and contemplation, oh yeah. To see we are united with every little thing as we journey to your light. Encourage us, we pray, to work for justice, peace, love, and understanding. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us every day. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us in every way. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us every day. Hey, hey. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you. Whoa. We thank you for being with us in every way.
Ah. Here we are at the Visionary Activist Show. Thank you, team. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for those beautiful words. This is Caroline Casey, your weaver of context. I'm grateful to be convening with ceremonial teammates introduced by fate, Sarah Wolcott and Chrissy Hill. It's true, as you said, we began in ceremony, inadvertent self-assembling in the parking lot outside the Palace of Fine Arts on the full moon in Taurus Scorpio, and now the full moon Scorpio Taurus is behind us. So yeah, I apologize in the middle of your narrative. Chrissy, if you want to distill or continue or where you'd like to go from that with coyote hair wafting around you.
It was actually Sarah telling that story. And,
that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah. And I just listen to Sarah speak about history the way she does, and it feels like we transcend time and place and energy to hear some of these events as how we believe they unfolded and how they actually unfold and how we can engage with them in today's times is all part of the journey. So I'll return it back to Sarah to get us to reconciliation and that relates to the Akina.
There was a 3-day festival in 1621, which was called at that time by the men who were there, who were writing things down, which was the settler men. It was called a day of rejoicing. And the term Thanksgiving actually has a much more somber lineage in European traditions, as you may know. The term Thanksgiving is something that you usually will do after you win a victory in battle. You give thanks to the God for making you victorious. And that is part of the Christian lineage, but it's also part of the earlier imperial Roman and Greco traditions. It's not only within Christianity. And there is a sort of expectation that if you win in battle, you should give thanks to God for helping you win, which has within it theologically, like that notion has within it a triumphalism, and it has within it a sense that that God is to be thanked for your victory. And within that, there is a sense that you had the right to win. And no matter how much harm and how much violence and how unfair it may or may not have been, if you won, you won. And you had the right to the fruit, the labor, the people. Often in Roman times, they were put into slavery, whoever lost. And you had this sort of history, very long history, that Thanksgiving days, that's sort of their deeper, longer lineage. So this day of celebration between these two groups of people was actually referred to as a day of rejoicing. And a few years later, there was a Thanksgiving day after the genocide of, I think it was a Pequot people in Mystic, what is now Mystic, Connecticut. To call it a day of Thanksgiving after a massacre fell into this longer tradition of giving thanks for winning a battle. And then it was the day of rejoicing that happened was in many ways forgotten for about 150 years. We do see what they call Forefathers Day, which was a celebration of the pilgrims. It was started in the 1700s, so a good 150 years later. And then there came a time, 200 years later, when during the midst of the Civil War, when America was, Americans were known, had shifted from being known to be Native people, because for a long time, Americans were known to be Native people, and it shifted to Americans being known as white settlers, particularly male white settlers. And they, during this battle between brothers, that was a Civil War, this woman, Sally Josephia Hale, was successful in her campaign, her 20-year campaign to make Thanksgiving a national holiday. And Abraham Lincoln issued a Thanksgiving proclamation in the midst of the Civil War, which was a genius political move, but it was different than other Thanksgiving proclamations, than the history of Thanksgiving days that I was just explaining, in part because it was happening in the middle of the battle, not after either side had won, and because the extent to which it was thanking the earth and the ecology around him. He is very much in praise of the actual proclamation. It's actually quite beautiful, and it's in praise of this sort of moment of the beauty of the skies and the thunder and the mountains and the fruits of the harvest. And he invites people to come to a table. And in doing so, he's asserting Northern white Protestant culture into the entirety of the country. But he's also, so it's a complicated moment in a lot of ways of what happens in that moment. And it's the beginning of what becomes the Thanksgiving day as we come to celebrate it. And to be clear, that Thanksgiving day was never actually about the Native Americans.
It was never actually about Native people. It was about the Brotherhood during the Civil War.
So what shall we do now?
Yeah, so that brings us to now. And so for many Native peoples...
And liberating the cornucopia. And,
yes, we do want to liberate the cornucopia from the hands of the emperor. And so just to recognize that for so many people, Thanksgiving has come to mean the beginning of colonization, has come to be symbolic and associated with the beginnings of the destruction of land and the taking and theft of land. And so what the miracle, not the miracle, but the result of hard work and prayer today is that those, and persistence, yes, is that those stories are shifting. And Linda Coombs in 1992 from the Wampanoag community wrote a children's book, Powwow, which was, I think, one of the beginnings of the retelling of the Thanksgiving story for children. Mm. And she did tremendous work in the Wampanoag community ever since then. And Alexa Bunton, more recently from Bioneers, and some of her partners wrote the children's book Kipun, also centering Wampanoag stories and Wampanoag perspectives and honoring the three sisters. And in so many ways, raising up the Wampanoag history. And with that, we have today, there's like a whole many, many ways in which Native culture and is revitalizing, and in which we have an opportunity here to do what was not done in the beginning, to actually create relationships and listening and of authentically hearing each other's stories and traditions, to return land, to return to a different type of community, to change our land management practices, to engage in the land tax, such as the Sagoatea Land Trust Shumi Land Tax out there in the
Bay. So can you put that as a blessing that we can all ladle out, like in a prayerful sentence?
Yes.
And I will be stirring the cauldron.
And you will be stirring the cauldron. That's good.
Quite a few things have gone in.
Right. Well, we've got Coyote here for everybody's trickster resilience and ingenuity, and I do love how people astrology speaks through all of us without needing to know it. So as you were speaking, Sarah, too, reminding ourselves of just the dance around us, the sun and Venus and Mercury and the moon and Sagittarius, at particular degrees of enthusiastic exaltation, going, we can do this thing. It's Jupiter's other sign, and the sun quintiles Ceres, Demeter, dwarf planet, goddess of the earth, and about abundance and harvest. So it bestows on all and everything that both of you are giving voice to, you know, a living animation, and for all gathered around it, it says irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love. Ceres, Demeter is at 22 Virgo. That's where Neptune was when this country was founded. So the earth goddess is on top of the soul, or is dancing with the soul of America. There we go. We could toast that, right?
We'll
toast that, all right? Anybody who has a libation, we do toasting right now, you know, to affirm such things. Right, and then excavating back. So,
yeah. Yeah, so one of the things, you know, that we have brought into being and animation is recently the New York State of New York put across an announcement proclamation that public schools will now be required to change their names if they are related to Native American mascots or nicknames or anything like that. There is a substantial number of school districts that still have schools that use Indians, braves, peers, imagery,
chief,
names of lands that are not necessarily anything but harmful. And they did have a caveat of if a local set of Indian folk would be the Haudenosaunee people, say, go ahead, use our imagery, use our name, go ahead, and you can still do it. But that was a big deal. And recently there was a return to home of a medal that a Tuscarora received from George Washington that had went wandering over the course of time, and that has been returned back to our people within the last month. And that's been a long journey. It was like a year or two to actually get it home with all the doings that are required of such homecoming.
So it must have a lot of stories to tell.
Most certainly.
As it returns home. And then just at our sacramental table, you know, part of the Jupiter being hummed in all of us, just reminds us that we live in a storytelling creation, right? That everything's telling us its story by shape and color and song and rhythm. And if we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be okay as a species. You know, we'd be coming home again from our kidnapped journey, right? So we could do informed, reverent curiosity as a libation for all beings. Oh. There we go, around the table. Informed, reverent curiosity as one of our ways of cahooting with the world.
Part of that informed curiosity is part of what led Jessie Little Doe Baird in Massachusetts to. She's a Wampanoag woman, and she was able to actually revitalize the Wampanoag language through tremendous hard work and diligence. And now today, I want to give, you know, thanks and blessings that today the Wampanoag language is being taught in schools, in the high school district, on traditional Wampanoag territory and land. And that is, you know, that was a long time coming. And
that's just to interrupt you, and that's not the only Indigenous community that gets to do that. Earlier, we spoke of the Thanksgiving address. Previously, I had only known it by a word we had borrowed from one of our brothers and sister of the Confederacy, and we now have our own word for the Thanksgiving address rather than using that superimposed English kind of disruption of what it actually meant. And so the Kataharak Thetra is a word that we've only been speaking for 5 to 10 years, maybe, the Thanksgiving address.
Kataharak Thetra.
Yeah, we have our own name for it. We have our own word. We have our own origin.
Say it again.
Kataharak Thetra.
Kataharak Thetra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One more time.
Kataharak Thetra. And right. You know that my grandchild can speak Mohawk and can know a little bit of Tuscarora and other languages, and they're only 8.
Right. No, I love that, and I also love Brother David Grimes saying when Chief Marie was dying, Chief of the Athabascan Eyak people, and one of the last speakers of that language, and her tribal team was worried that the language would die with her, and she said, "No, the language comes from the earth, and if you maintain your connection to the earth, the language will burble back up." And I loved her.
Oh, it does.
Her fierce blessing. Yeah, her fierce blessing.
Let's give a blessing for that connection to the earth.
Yes, our feet to the earth. And, you know, and part of the quintile available to us is, you know, may we be effective agents and storytellers and voices for what we love, you know, in the court of human culture, you know, crossing that. So, yes, and with our feet and rooted to the earth. Yes, those.
And speaking to feet rooted to the earth, like the number of Native-led and Native partnerships, particularly with the national parks, right now we have the first time where we have a Native leader of the national parks and Chuck Sims, and the extent to which we are seeing a revitalization of Native land management practices and opportunities, particularly for young people, to really get out into the forest and revitalize their traditions from Alaska all the way into the Midwest and all the way down into the Southern Southwest. We see many different opportunities for young people to go back into the forest and revitalize native cultures.
Not just forests, though. Waters.
Waters.
Mm.
Deserts, mountains.
Mountains. And we're giving
meadows,
myceliums.
Mycelia. No, that's right. The large and the small, the yes. Mycelia, the tardigrades, and the whales. Just to go back, you were mentioning the whales and the Wampanoag and Martha's Vineyard and whales and the creation story, and just even in the befoibled Old Testament, Leviathan whale is the only creature that God plays with. He's like, oh, that's wrong. Yeah. So the only creature that could get Yahweh playful is the whale. But yes, we're circling around. Whale's a big thing. Jupiter likes big things. The messages and the micro.
We need these big creatures to help us right now.
We do. And we are proclaiming ourselves as, you know, available partners. I view this time, for which, you know, it's dire beauty, right? That Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster, genius, coyote, raven, you know, is in Taurus, which is participatory animism, for another four-ish years. And it's like, we're grateful that we have this time to honor, to forge our across species borders alliances, and to view all that we love as accomplices. If we make our dedication and our gratitude, like today, you know, again, proclaiming and either inwardly or said around everybody's, you know, feasting table. And also for those who are, you know, alone, apparently, or, you know, having a lonely meal somewhere. It's like, no, there's spirits, there's things, there's whatever, ancestors, who do we feel kinned with that we want to invite? I love the ancestors feast. And so for ancestors, you always do put out food. And we were talking about, you know, the tradition of when you eat, you on your plate, you make a little spirit plate, like a little bite of every single food for the spirits and the ancestors. Yeah, and so are there ancestral beings that you want to offer a little bit of your food plate to, or invite in, everybody? But Chrissy and Sarah, do you have, you know, compadres, accomplices, not just human, you know, but anybody you want to invite to the table to help stir the cauldron in the other direction?
I'd like to invite those who are looking for the collective, for the community, for the sense of togetherness that they either have missed or have forgotten or want to uplift more of the same. And that also includes the turkeys.
That includes the turkey?
Yeah, we live next to turkeys and they grace us quite frequently. There's a lot of wisdoms that they're sharing as we watch them through Turkey TV. The big windows looking out onto the hill.
I love that. So now we're in our culminating Act 5 blessing festival, last several minutes of our offering. So again, it's blessing. It's like blessing poker. I see your blessing and raise you one. You know, and remember that the quintile is the capacity to open portals between worlds, right? Mm-hmm. So we have our libations. Some of us have our candles, right? And then just anything for which we are grateful. Gratitude opens the path. You know, do you want to proclaim gratitude?
I'm grateful for the removal of the four dams of the Klamath River, and that the salmon are now going to be able to swim back to their ancestral homelands of the Yurok Nation, and for all the many Yurok people who fought, and the many environmentalists along the river who fought for that in what is now Northern California, for the return of the salmon.
Wonderful. And Chrissy, do you have a gratitude woof?
Oh, definitely. Mostly for the people that want to make change, do make change, and will continue to make change.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So we are holding up on our blessings and our blessings for the wolves and the coyotes and all of our kin, and that humans have manners again. That would be really super wonderful. And then, you know, I think our collective toast was, I said, you know, Terence McKenna, whose birthday was just a few days ago on the same day that LSD was manufactured. Hey there, Terence said, imagine life first leaving the sea. Ooh, and feeling the gravitational pull of the earth, ooh, and going, oh, this is hard. Can we do this? And he said, life always responds, you betcha. Right. So, you know, part of our dynamic is shall we just do a toast of together?
Everybody? Raise our glasses.
Our glasses.
Explain
and we do a toast
with love
to everybody, and we go, you betcha, 1, 2, 3, you betcha,
you betcha.
That's right. Wonderful. Thank you both so much. Again, Chrissy Hill and Sarah Wilcott, and everybody at home, and everybody and all the ancestors, and Harriet Tubman invited to the party, just everything. And thanks, grateful for this show, grateful for listeners, grateful to Chrissy and Sarah, grateful, you know, to our cahooting time together. Thank you, team. Woof, woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Well, you betcha.